Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cries the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance.
welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight. Here, the mind becomes a playground, a vast universe, unique, free of the constraints born in preconceived theories, where your voice will be uncloaked, heard. I am Pam Ray, and co-hosting with me tonight, I have Jeremy F. Jeremy and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen, and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. And if you find that if tonight's show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everybody's taste. Also, make sure when you get a chance to check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And hello, Jeremy. How's it going?
Hello, hello, Pammy. I'm trying to use my best sexy Rexy voice, but I am a very awful substitute for the original.
Oh, my goodness. Isn't everybody, though?
All I can do is try my best at a baritone, and it's awful when I do or try it out loud.
Yeah, it's like, hello there, pretty mama.
I know. I'm a weak imitation of the original. Much love to our good co-host, the original Rex, Intimidus Rex. I'm sorry he's not here tonight, and I'm sorry that the listeners get me as a weak substitute.
Oh, my goodness, Brian, I'm so happy to have you here. You are awesome, and
absolutely,
I'm glad to have you here. I do hope that, you know, Rex feels better soon. From what I hear, he should be, fingers crossed, you know, back by the end of this week. So, but we'll see how that goes.
Well, and in order to not have to call in for many more shows, I have FedExed him a envelope full of chicken noodle soup. So hopefully that trick works.
Well, you have to tell me how to do that, because I actually sent him a text message, which he did not laugh at, probably because he was too sick. But I told him, I tried mailing you chicken noodle soup, but it kept leaking out of the envelope.
Great minds think alike.
Yeah, he was probably like going, Pam, I'm too sick to respond to your stupid joke.
We all wish him well. He is sorely missed here on the late night poets radio show. So hopefully he feels better, Rex.
Absolutely. Well, I do have 3 people lined up to join us, so I'm going to go ahead and bring them on one at a time. So first of all, I'd like to welcome Gavin Brenner to the show. Welcome, Gavin. Glad you could be here.
Thanks for having me on. It's always a pleasure.
Very cool. And how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm fantastic. I'm ready to read some poetry and enjoy it with you guys.
Wonderful. All right. And then we have area code 626. You're on the air. Who are we speaking to, please?
This is Marilyn Monrovia. I'm from Monrovia, California.
All right. And then we have Sucker for the Treadmill, or Sean. Welcome, Sean. Glad you could join us.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to the show tonight.
Very cool. Me too. And how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well, actually.
Good.
Things are looking up lately, so yeah.
All right. Well, and Sean, if you wish to share a write tonight, we do have room, so you could go ahead and share, put a link on the topic board for After Midnight 4-4 carryovers and open After Midnight, if you want to. You don't have to, but you're welcome to. And
I'd love to, but I think I left the group a while ago and need an invite back to post.
Oh, that's right. Well, okay. That's right. Well, if you want
to
share a link, you can, but you can just message it to me.
Okay.
All right. And with that being said, all right. And now, Gavin, do you have to read and run, or will you be here for a while?
I'll be here for a little while. I'm doing homework while I'm doing this.
Ah, all right. Well, double tasking. All right. Well, up first, and tonight is going to be carryovers from different shows plus open after midnight poetry. And so up first we have Blues Man by Louise B. And it goes like this. You want a cigar with that guitar? You're playing like you do, knees bending, hands sliding, head shaking, your beautiful face looking smug, knowing you got this right, the rhythm, the chords, the flourish, your performance all for me, knowing I got this night for dancing, for stretching, for free. Blues man, play another number and see. End poem. And Jeremy, your thoughts on this poem?
You know, a blues man, and what really strikes me about this poem, and great read, by the way, Pam, what strikes me about this poem is the brevity of it. When you think about a blues man, when you think about someone that wants to sit down with that cigar and that guitar, it's going to be a long, drawn-out story about his dog getting kicked and his pickup getting broken down. And it's going to be played with, in a smoky bar and some whiskey and all. It's not country music, but there's blues. There's blues to it that is a long, drawn-out ensemble of being the blues man, right? There's a lot of hip-hop and bebop, but with soul and heart and sorrow. And the fact that this – and what I really dig about what Louise did here is – it's the blues man in a snapshot because you don't get to see that much. And what I liked about it the most was in the towards the end, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, for stretching for free. Knowing I got this night for dancing for stretching for free. I mean, there was a liberating moment about this that like pointed at the blues man and said, you know what? I'm not trying to emulate what being the blues is. I'm just saying what the blues man is all about. And so I kind of like the character study of this in that way. And the fact that it's a brevity is kind of like, it's not getting into the whole genre of being the blues man, but it's pointing at the blues man. And it's making me feel, it's a cool perspective, I guess, is what I'm putting together in a long diatribe. So no, I think what Louise put here together is indeed the blues man, but it's more from a perspective that is a fresh breath of air. I don't know. I dug it.
It really, yeah, I can definitely see that. Though the brevity thing, I will admit, was in part my fault because I'm the one who ran the contest, and it's a brevity contest of 35 to 95 words. So, you know, good old Louise was just following my rules. Though she did choose the topic, kind of. It was the song Have a Cigar by Pink Floyd was the prompt. But, yeah, it is a wonderful, like you said, it's a wonderful snapshot that captures that brief moment of the blues man. So excellent comment. And Gavin, your thoughts?
Okay, so this final stanza here, I think, addresses the musician directly with the speaker urging him to play another number in C, as it says. I think the overall tone of the poem is one of appreciation and admiration for the musician's skill and the passion that comes with that. Like the playing of the blues, right, is like an expression of sadness, but it's bringing so much joy and intimacy to the sharing of it. And it's like your performance all for me It's more of like a very personal and intimate sharing of that sadness, and each sadness is, in and of itself is unique. It's really interesting.
Comment. And Sean, your thoughts?
Sorry, I wasn't listening. I was sending you poems of mine to potentially read, so I can't comment on this one. But I will be available for the next one.
Okay. All right. Well, I thought this was a wonderful brevity. I did give her silver in the contest. I liked the voice she provided in this rite. I thought it was particularly had that sensual bluesy vibe that I really appreciated, and had a wonderful flow of imagery. I especially liked knowing you got this right, the rhythm, the chords, the flourish, you know, so excellent rite and very well done. All right, let's see what we got next. All right. Up next, we have The Book of Bruises by Ben Hart. And Jeremy, will you give that a read for us, please?
Well, my dear Pammy, you know I am a very recent Ben Hart fan because of another show that we have here on All Poetry. So absolutely, I'd love to read it. The Book of Bruises by Ben Hart. The beating heart of rainfall run through every shade in the book of bruises, on their way to smolder like earthly nebulae on their bereaved beholder. Welcome her back again. Dancing the dying breath of the last streetlight shining, letting the trepid rain scar on starving lips. Every sway of her hips a rather sad silver lining for the dreamer in the dark, chasing ghosts across the pastel deserts. And I'm sure they're gladly to go if we'd ever let them. But we need them more than the dead men, filling the footsteps with more snow. And I dare not look at her because I fear I'll find somewhere in the wasted eyes that beauty that had blinded myself so far away from daybreak, so recklessly reminded that I'm a mosaic of mistakes and nothing more. And there was a time I was not afraid of kissing glass snakes in the Garden of Gethsemane, seek out a lowly demise in aromatic disguise, but now I have worn the crown of thorns before, and now on the third day I didn't rise. Because I was still washing the blood from my eyes, and the clearing the anchors of the aching you left upon my fortune shores. Sam, I can't do this anymore. I may still be too young to overdose. I'm getting too old to be unhappy. Please retreat. Pull your cold hands from my chest, but leave my heart with me. I guess Achilles was not as turned out to be, because I never won the fight against the Dysophic ride. I see tattoos buried in the trench coat, and I can hardly breathe. And Sam, please believe, I commented every attempt to untether me, but what you see is healing. What you think is kind doesn't feel like mercy to me. Even between bruising and birth, tattooed in celestial skin by someone divine that couldn't find the time to color me in, you're leading me down that black hedge maze of the mind where blackbirds sing on a wire about the pole of love unrequited and push by which the mother left behind.
Great read there, Jeremy. And as always, just an amazing write by Ben Hart. And Gavin, your thoughts?
I think this is a very interesting, complex write. I think the speaker describes a woman dancing in the rain and the rather sad silver lining of her movement suggests that even moments of joy are tinged with pain. Like the line, I'm a mosaic of mistakes, emphasizes the speaker's sense of guilt and regret when the reference to the crown of thorns was washing blood from their eyes evokes the image of Christ suffering. So this is a rather complex piece to analyze, I think, but there's so much to it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. He does write poems that need to be read more than once in order to analyze them. You know, I like how this has strong imagery and metaphors. And you kind of get a sense of somebody who's trying to discover themselves and, you know, be kind of had almost that idea of feeling lost or unnoticed in the world. I really like this all the way through, but especially chasing ghosts across pastel deserts. And I'm sure they'd gladly go if we'd ever let them, but we need them more than the dead men filling in the footsteps with more snow. You know, it feels like people, the idea of being that person that somebody, people just don't notice. And I could be reading it wrong, but that's kind of the idea, the thought that I get from it. So wonderful lines and very well done. And Jeremy, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
And it's awful. Jeremy did an awful read of that. And I apologize, Ben. It's so hard when you read a poem and you stumble through it because you're thinking something and then the words evade me, Ben. You know, I'm a huge fan, and I love the fact that there was so much to this poem. I mean, very much to what you guys have already talked about. I love the fact that he always includes artwork with his poetry, original artwork, that always supports the mood of what comes. The formatting is beautiful. The pace of it is beautiful. And the tone has what you guys, again, alluded to, has that religious undertone to it that is not clearly defined, but it still has the passion of it, right? All of the mantra, the dogma that goes along with religion, without being so literal and not in your face. It's more, it's the bruise. I don't know how else to put it. It's that temporary punch that leaves a mark for a minute, and it has a, is it a word, Pam? A paralytic? Parable? Speaking of parables,
parabolic.
It has an impact.
You can make it a word.
I don't know. We're making up words tonight. But you know what I mean? I mean, parabolic? It's not parabolic.
Parabolic
we're speaking
sounds
in
like a disease.
What Ben did here, yeah, I get the feeling.
Parable-like quality.
Yes. I mean, if we're going to connect as poets, right, all that matters is the fact that I got the feeling of what he's trying to say. And it all says it in the title, The Book of Bruises. It is something that has a religious undertone, and where that pain comes from, where that mark that hurts enough to leave that mark but then goes away, it feels. And I felt that in this poem. So I don't know a better way. I feel like I'm stumbling even more so in my analytics of this poem that I did in the read, but it was impactful. And Ben always has that ability to do that. So all I got to say is kudos, and I'll sign off before I make more of an ass of myself.
Well, I think that was a wonderful comment, especially the fact that you came up with a word. So, you know, very cool. And Sucker, your thoughts?
I like to me this one feels more like incantory, I think would be the right word, like casting a spell. Like dancing on the dying breath of that last street light shining like a detected rain scar on starving lips. Like people who do who do not know how to say what they want or need to say. For the dreamers in the dark, chasing ghosts. Because
very cool. Great observation. All right. And up next, we have The Traveler by Xylophonic Blues. And Gavin, would you give that a read for us, please?
The Traveler. One. Tsunami noon swept off your legs. Landscape towers perch upon thatched roof, squeezed through narrow path of hardships. Gauzy fabric becomes a quilted metropolis. Cinnamon-sprinkled compass needle spinning, pointing north. Abandoned traveler walking along the little cobble. South, east, or west. Listen to the murmur from distance. Imagination crossing desert plains. Forethoughts low down, heavy breathing. Through vertically pleated trees. Sand's hourglass runs fingers into claws, outstretched arms, sky lanterns, rice paper, luminous launched wireframe, tarmac submerged, refactory arrows, preparing night. Walk towards east, travel half hour west, blockades of discouragements. Don't lose, you turn clockwise, turn counterclockwise, travel north. Or travel towards north, unlatch. Two. Atmospheric elevation marking the passage. Upside down sunflower rains, shrouded clouds. Breeze gusts along as whirlwinds fly. Pendulum's river runs brittle through wilderness. Mist grit, whispering eyes, pool of nocturnal sky. Tailspun tranquility, wetness of sands unlatches. Here, you must leave me and drift away. Latitudes forgive roaming longitudinal loosened water plant. Chameleons, acrimonious layers of clay, stone shifting sands rise toward the sky, displaced. Three. Glacier manicured dreamlands, path of star-studded sky, belts, tundra, tapestries, between soles of your feet, foam sandals encounters sea granules, sweeping forest through sandstorm's hourglass. Prayers stow your life jacket. Thank God, lumen perfumed moist dew can breathe again. Canyon walls float away on the stairway ocean breeze. Pleated mahogany turbans, outlined terracotta, oxidized crescent dark, forms yearning upwards, no time to lie down. Four. Waves of apex vision rippled via your mind. Listen, walking along a ridge of white sand. Traverse back seconds, minutes, hours. Cleans brooks. Inhale a thousand valleys. Life's cooler below the surface. Stepping barefoot, rolling down a dune of land, rearranging skyscrapers, telephone poles, row after row. Morning encounters, white pebble flecks, skin, lips, and hand. Pilgrimage burrows amid amorous sighs. Journal diary wondering, have you been horizontal? Baby crawl, child walk, adult ran. Elder flew, kindled, exchanging a solid stand. End poem.
Great read there, Gavin. It's not easy to read an abstract poem and put emotion into the read, but I think you did a wonderful job with that. This is, as always, Xylophonic Blues has just beautiful writing, thought-provoking imagery and metaphors. A wonderful style that's all his own with the way he allows the poem to flow in different stanza shaping. So, it's just got a wonderful sense of movement. I like how this speaks to me on the passing of time. and the idea of not wasting it, but getting out there, you know, and really taking that journey of life. I really like Pendulum's River Runs Brittle Through Wilderness, Mist Grit, Whispering Eyes, Pools of Nocturnal Sky, Tailspun Tranquility, Wetness of Sand Unlatches. Canyon Walls Float Away on the Stairway Ocean Breeze, Pleated Mahogany Turbans, Outlined Terracotta, Oxidized Crescent Dark Forms Yearning Upward, No Time to Lie Down. It just speaks on the idea to me of how much beauty there really is out there in the world. It almost seems to me to speak on the idea of the natural wonders of the world. So excellent write and very well done. And Sean, your thoughts. Are you on mute, sucker?
Yeah, sorry. But I really appreciate this write. I think it's a good explanation of the multiple directions you can go when you're trying to write something. Like, I guess the sound of south, east, or west, listen to the murmur from distant. The imagination crossing desert plains, forethought slowed down, heavy breathing. And there's a lot of directionality involved, which I think is pretty on point. I don't I always feel really stupid when I talk about poetry. But it's hard to write well. I mean, Pendulum's River Runs Brittle Through Wilderness, Mist Grit, Whispering Eyes. Sorry, I don't really know what else to say.
All right. Well, and Jeremy, your thoughts.
Treadmill, we're with you, buddy. There's no wrong answers when it comes to the interpretation of poetry, so anything you can give us is well received. You know what's really cool about xylophonic? I mean, I don't know how else, and this is going to sound super cheesy, but this is, I'm not afraid to sound super cheesy, okay, Pammy? This is laying in the street and just letting those raindrops of words fall. Because, Gavin, the way you read this was exquisite. I mean, it was fun for me, especially with, I'm a fan of xylophonic. I was introduced to him, Pammy, a month ago or whenever when we had it on our show. But I love xylophonic's appreciation for words. And there's not poetic device in it. It's not obvious poetic device for me. It's just, there's a trickle of, it's laying in the road in the middle of a highway and letting the words at night drip down on you. I don't know how else to describe it. It's a love for language. And it's not only in the sound of language, because it's not a poetic device. It's the shape of it too. I don't know how else to put it other than it's a fun way to explore the way things sound, and it's a fun way to look at the world. And I think xylophonic has a whole other twist on things that we're all going to be studying in 50 years from now when we're too old to understand even poetry, because I think it's a fresh new way of a celebration of expression. And so I always like the fact that there's attention to the formatting, there's attention to the position and lettering, and I don't know. It's kind of just, it's for a wordy, for someone that tries to be a wordy in myself, I think xylophonic looks at poetry in a different way that is always a pleasure. And I think, again, Gavin, you did a wonderful job of celebrating that in a wonderful read.
Absolutely. I have to agree. And, yeah, you can really tell that xylophonic blues has a real appreciation for words and for the art of poetry. And Gavin, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Oh, well, thanks all for the compliments. I just I like to read and voice act and that kind of stuff, but I'm still learning it. But the way that this poem is structured made it, like you said, incredibly fun to read. There's so much about it that where you could just take your time with it, kind of savor each word pairing in the line. And then you can kind of like go a little bit faster in some parts, but some parts are obviously much slower, right? But I think that this kind of poem, even though in its abstractness, does send a very like clear picture of someone who loves to get lost, who relishes in just finding a new path in life and is always in that new path, and it's in an unexplored world constantly. So it's almost like someone who's rediscovering every inch of the world, right?
Oh, I like that. I like that, the idea of rediscovery. Very cool. Very cool. All right. Well, up next we have Medicine by Adrian 41062, and it goes like this. The sun shimmers in another day across golden sands and around the bay. I leave my footprints on the dampened path, birds dipping and diving into a briny path. The warmth of the sun already on my face, this my favorite hiding place. Walking for miles, tides roll on the beach. This inner soul nature will always reach. Its crowning glory, the hills that surround, and morning awakened in a chorus of sound. For miles and miles, my heart is just free, a natural tonic and medicine to me. End poem. And Jeremy, your thoughts? Oh, I guess I have to bring Jeremy back on. All right. That would help.
Can you hear me now?
Welcome back to... Yes, I can. Welcome back, Jeremy.
Happy to be here. I had the pleasure of living on the beach for roughly a decade. And Pammy knows because she used to visit me almost on a weekly basis. She got frequent flyer miles from coming down and having long walks on the beach with me. So she knows what I'm talking about. But there's nothing cooler. There's nothing cooler than that moment of being on the beach and enjoying it. And it's hard to kind of put in words because I think for a lot of people it's a personal journey, right? And I like the fact that Adrian was able to capture this for me. I mean, I haven't been back to the coast for 5 years. And in brief measure, I think Adrian was able to take me to that place. And so I would just say kudos, because in a lot of ways it's a spiritual thing, and I felt that in this poem, so I enjoyed it. Rock on.
Absolutely, absolutely. And one of the things Jeremy didn't mention, which I'm surprised, is that when we go for walks on the beach, I would wear my itsy bitsy teeny weeny yellow polka dot bikini.
Absolutely.
And Gavin, your thoughts?
Okay, so I do think that nature is the best medicine, and I think even in this short piece with like a single stanza sort of a thing, it does still like bring that imagery to mind where you're healing on the beach almost, that walking along the beach and feeling the warmth of the sun on your face is just such a wonderful feeling, because it's really vitamin D. It is the true medicine that helps us with a lot of the stuff in our lives, whether it's anxiety or hormonal imbalance or whatever it is. It's not just physical healing. Yeah. And I think that's what poetry is too. So, I mean, it is in and of itself the shape of a poem in spirit. So I love it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. I have to agree. There is something very healing about nature and laughter. Nature and laughter are just two wonderful things to have. And, you know, I really like the rhyme and flow in this. The imagery is very comforting. It's definitely a well-deserved goal in the contest. And I like the use also of alliteration, especially bird dipping and diving into a briny bath. You know, wonderful lines and very well done. All right, let's see what we have next. All right, up next we have It Suits You by Linda Burns. And Jeremy, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
If It Suits You by Linda Burns. He said I had a film over my mind, that I saw everything through a haze that I had invented to comfort myself. Well, that's not how I wanted to be, so I began to scratch around the edges of my life's page to remove this unrealistic film. It took me days of not sleeping and not eating before I began to find tattered edges of it that I could almost grasp with my blistered, shaking fingers that were directed by bleary, itchy eyes that needed so badly to sleep. But I found one. I scratched up enough of it so I could grip it securely. Then I pulled. It came up about 25% off the page of my life, revealing that underneath my film was a brighter, more joyful day of happiness and laughter. My numb fingers could not keep hold of the film-like covering as my fingers lost hold, and the film slipped seamlessly back into the darker corners of my world. I couldn't proceed. I couldn't lift those exhausting digits again, even a little, and then dropped rather abruptly into a deep sleep. They could be penetrated by nothing other than any number of hours of total lack of contentiousness. Days later when I awoke, there was no sign of the tear, and my world was once more covered end to end with comforting haze. I shook my head in dismay as I wondered what had possessed me to try and save myself from protection. I called him and told him to mind his own business. End poem.
Great read there, Jeremy, and what a wonderful write, a very thoughtful write by Linda Burns. It kind of almost makes me think of the whole idea of gaslighting and somebody telling you, you know, you're taking it all wrong. I did like the bite in the end line, you know, and I like this extended metaphor and the idea, you know, the idea of the, instead of the film over the cornea, the film over the mind, because I do believe there are people who have that kind of blindness, that blindness where they just refuse to see something. So I do think this poem could be taken either way. But I really felt there was a great attention to detail in this, and I particularly like, but my numb fingers could not keep hold of the film like covering, and as my fingers lost hold, the film slipped seamlessly back into the darker corners of my world. I know it just feels like, you know, trying to change a part of yourself that just isn't meant to be changed. So excellent write and very well done. And Gavin, your thoughts?
But I think it's important to remember that change can be difficult, and it's always sometimes uncomfortable. Even when it's for the better. It sounds like the speaker in this poem is attempting to break free from a self-imposed haze or an illusion that was limiting their perspective on life. However, the process was difficult, and they ultimately were unable to let go of their protective mechanism. So it's like it's understandable that the speaker would feel frustrated and defensive when someone pointed out there's self-deception, but it's also worth considering whether there may be some truth to the criticism, right? Sometimes it can be helpful to have a trusted friend or a therapist to support us through this process of growth and change, but, you know.
Oh, absolutely, yes. And then that's, like I said, that the poem could go either way, because it could be that, as you were saying, the person isn't willing to get past their self-defenses. But it could also be, I was thinking the kind of the idea, like I said, of gaslighting, and that there never really was a problem there. But, it's interesting. It's interesting how perspectives can change. So excellent comment there. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
No, I love the way you both look at this. And you know what's really cool is the way that this extended metaphor is carried. Because you know that film and the way that this film is applied, it's that tacky, cumbersome film that you can't quite grab a corner of and you're sitting there picking at, but you just clipped your nails and you can't quite dig at it correctly. And then I think, Pam, even you said that burning line there at the end, the fact that it's a standalone, I called him and told him to mind his own business. The fact that you can't quite get that film off, you can't get that lack of clarity away, and it's so incredibly annoying. You just want to rip it clean. It's a wonderful extended metaphor, and I like the fact that it's kind of quirky in the fact. It's a storytelling poem from an angle that you would never think of. So I love the imagination of it, and I love the fact that it was carried so well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment. And it does carry the extended metaphor quite well. So very cool. All right. And then we have A White Rose Revelry by Titus Lowell, and we do have a SoundCloud for that. So here we go.
A White Rose Revelry. Cottage gardens preserve the mystery of long ago, an appearance well-worn yet statuesque. There stands the history relating to the gods, and so too a thorn, a poet's thoughts would in time trace a rambling rose to bless one's chivalry. For each in flower does fall from grace, the arches tall do overhang all reverie. This a statue's rest, a garden overgrown, monumental in size, does the romance of it all continue to keep an eye alone, to love lightly with words to entrance. Ah yes, the War of Roses, he'll walk, a time of remembrance and civil wars, adopt the purest white, a rose of York, didst the Lancashire wind stain his paws? Not at all, to think how pink the flesh reminded him the sweetest pea variety has garnered its position so, to refresh a fragrant rose, he'd beautify notoriety.
Great reading right there, Titus. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And just a reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Not the next best thing. The very best thing is the SoundCloud. No, I love this. And I think this is the first time I've been able to enjoy a Titus original poem. I don't know that I've ever heard him ever perform anything before. And it was very pleasurable. And I want to speak to the fact that I like the fact that there was music behind what he did. But not only that, there was a sing-songy inflection, especially in the first, the way he enunciated his S's, and the way he kind of flowed beyond the punctuation. I want to say it's always a pleasure when people submit their SoundClouds, and what Titus did here gave me a different appreciation to how I would have read it in my own mind's eye. So I think there was a lyrical value that was brought to the words that he put together that made this flow on a whole different level that I wouldn't even have expected. So I really enjoyed it, Titus. So, again, much appreciated that you submitted the SoundCloud.
Oh, absolutely. It really does make a difference a lot of times to hear the poem read in the poet's own voice. So great comment. And, Gavin, your thoughts?
So The War of the Roses is, like, something I started reading about after I, like, got into Game of Thrones. So I really enjoy the historical and political dimension to this poem. And the poet wonders whether a white rose of York could have won without being stained by the blood of Lancashire. I think this line of thoughts like quickly dismissed in favor of a more whimsical reflection on the beauty of a fragrant rose and its ability to refresh and beautify, if that makes sense.
Yeah. You know, I have to agree with you. The historical and political references to the War of the Roses was definitely a great touch. And, yeah, so very cool that comment. Yeah, I thought this had a wonderful classic feel to it between the word choices and the reading. I like how it speaks on the battles within and the appreciation for true beauty and poetry. I really like a poet's thoughts would in time trace a rambling rose to bless one's chivalry, for each in flower does fall from grace, the arches tall do overhang all revelry. Absolutely beautiful lines, and thank you, Titus, for sharing that with us. Very much appreciated. All right, let's see what we have next. All right, here we go. And up next, we have Dance with the Wind by Robert Polsky. And Gavin, go ahead, please, and give that a read for us.
All right, Dance with the Wind by Robert Polsky. I am dancing with the wind. Dancing is my freedom. My spirit is floating like foam on the crest of a wave. At high tide under a full moon in perfect rhythm, like an opening flower or a bird aloft, I drift into space, losing track of time. In the wind, the sun, and the rain, I fly on spirit wings, extend my arms, half liquid, in the perfect rhythm. They don't stop at the end of my fingers. I move with the wind, like autumn leaves. I don't fall, I fly with the wind. I show that I am more than a match for gravity. Dance, joy, anger, and hope, all woven together to heal, to write a novel in moments, in a language that is much more ancient than words, feeling the movement as a new breath for my body, nourishment for the tired spirit. After that, the sleep comes easy. The dreams are of more twirls and leaps to the music that is part of my blood. I am between the light and the waves, dancing with the wind where the fire burns and where the water drowns. And when my time comes, I'll be gone with the wind in poem.
Great read there, Gavin. You know, I thought this was absolutely an exquisite write. I gave it gold in the contest Break On Through the Dancing of Lily Fuller, which is actually one of the more difficult contests I've ever judged because there was just so much beautiful poetry in it. And, you know, I thought this was a wonderful write. I liked the sense of movement in it. The imagery and metaphors were beautiful and brilliant. And I like how it speaks on the idea of how dance is an art form that is an expression of self and the way that stories can be told with dance. You know, wonderful lines all the way through, but I especially like feeling the movement as a new breath for my body, nourishment for the tired spirit. After that, the sleep comes easy. The dreams are of my more twirls and leaps to the music that is part of my blood. Wonderful lines and very well done. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Once again, Gavin, you have a gift for this. Your performance of this poem was exquisite. I think you should read more. You should contribute more because I always enjoy listening. For the few tonight, I've enjoyed what you put together when you perform poetry. So. Very well done. You know what's funny? Are you ready, Pam? Go ahead and take notes. Mm-hmm. Growing up, middle school, R.J. Spelsberg was able to dance in the middle of our middle school dance, and we all stopped, made a circle around him because he knew how to put down moves. And I was always so envious about how he was able to get into the spirit of a song. Wild Thing by Tone Loc. And
there is a freedom. Bring back memories.
There's a freedom to that. There's a freedom to that. And it wasn't until much later in life, I mean, going into school, going into college, and then going into when I became confident in myself and my own freedom to let my freak flag fly, that I became embraced dance. And there's a spirit to what is expressed in this poem. There's a freeing to it, and there's a beauty to it. And there's, especially in the prompted photo of this long flowing white dress, of just being free, and that the confidence in dance is what allures other people into wanting to circle around you like in that middle school dance and cheer you on. And that's the beauty of dance. And there's a turn in this at the very end. And when my time comes, I'll be gone with the wind. It when that dance ends, I mean, that little three lines at the end changed the whole thing. For all of the beginning, it was Thelma and Louise, right? It was, okay, I can be free. I want to let my spirit be happy and dance. But when my time comes, I'll be gone with the wind. I mean, that's the truth. If you don't enjoy it, if you don't enjoy the ride, if you're not bold enough to enjoy the dance and let people frown, let people point, let people giggle, let people join you and take your hand and enjoy the melody, then what was the point? So this had me smiling on a whole different level, on several levels. And I appreciate what Robert put together, because I think it's beautiful, and I think that's what it's all about. And again, Gavin, you did it justice.
Absolutely, absolutely. Good comment there. And yeah, you know, somehow I always had a picture in my head of you, like, doing the Running Man, you know, and
the worm, Pammy.
The worm.
I was known for the worm.
No, the hustle.
Yeah.
I can see him doing the
And Gavin, I have to agree with Jeremy. I do hope that you'll be able to join us more, share your poetry, share your wonderful reading voice. And I'd like to know your thoughts on Robert Polsky's poem.
Okay, so I think that this is a really beautiful and lyrical piece that captures the exhilarating freedom and joy of dancing with the wind, right? Letting the music be the one that guides your arms and that sort of stuff. And I think it does a great job. Like, it's a very successful poem in the way of conveying that sense of joy, freedom, and deep emotional resonance that comes with dance, right? But I think the final lines of the poem are particularly poignant. It's like the speaker muses on their eventual departure from this world, kind of like imagining themselves being carried away with the wind. Kind of adds like a bittersweet note to the poem, right? It's like the joy of, and freedom of dance are juxtaposed with like the transience of human life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment. Wonderful observation. All right. And up next we have Glass of White Wine by Hats, and it goes like this. I drowned the cigarette in a glass of white wine while watching the sleeping male body in a room with a brown carpet. Curtains have the color of white coffee. The hope was leaving me, the same as a soul left my grandfather's body, slowly and painlessly. Without pain, I wasn't bleeding. It is as if a boulder on a chest while chewing pebbles. The moon didn't shine, but it was stuck in the darkness like an acne on my left cheek. Yesterday, the world tasted like Swiss praline. Today, it fucked me up in the ass. Tomorrow, I will pretend that it's not so bad with me. End poem. And Gavin, your thoughts?
Hey. Kind of fast, but I think it's like the imagery of the moon kind of stuck in my, like, the darkness and the acne on the speaker's cheeks kind of adds to the sensation of like isolation, you know, or like a disconnection, as if the speaker's trapped in a world that's indifferent to their suffering, right?
I like that thought. And yeah, you know, the little details, like the comparing the moon to like the acne on the cheek really does, you know, add to the darkness and the kind of sense of isolation. So great observation. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
I love hats, and I know hats is on the boards listening in. So I didn't even know until I totally felt it reading it. And then the fact that it's a poem for a drunk Bukowski, it's totally raw like that. And I was going to make that comment even before I saw that. And I even felt that in the beginning. I drown a cigarette and a glass of white wine and the color of white coffee. I love the fact that it's just kind of it's sitting there at the racetrack. It's every part of everything that Bukowski ever wrote that all those that love him, I'm a huge fan, are able to put rawness in words. And it's rawness in words that is real and makes you kind of want to read more. And the only thing that – the only critique that I have on this hat is that it's such a brevity, because this thing could have gone on for another 20 lines and I would have been totally enthralled with everything that was done. I like the fact with the ampersand with – it's not an ampersand, the whatever, the squiggle without pain and the question mark. The fact that you're using punctuation to create those other emotions in this poem, the other pauses – and it's that added spice that makes the visual as much intriguing as the boldness of the actual content. So hats, this one is pure Buko, it's pure Chnasky, it's pure everything that I like about poetry when people get gritty. So nothing but applause out of me.
Absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, this just has amazing imagery, and you know, I like how she really captures the Bukowski tone. I actually have to give her kudos because I considered writing for this contest but chickened out because I know, like me, if I get drunk and write, I you would end up with this like 500-word poem of like nothing but me babbling because I had had too many shots of whiskey and decided to join in a Bukowski contest, you know. And 90% of the words would be MF, 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 or something like that. So, but, and definitely a well-deserved silver. I do like how she does the spacing and the pauses. The raw grittiness of this, you know, it's just an excellent write on the way that life messes with the mind. Like one day it's all fine and the next, well, you know, it just takes you when you bend over to pick up the soap. That's just the way life is. All right, and let's see what we have next. And you did great there, Hats. Awesome writing. Yes, I think I should actually at one point try to write poetry plastered, you know. So, but all right. Up next, we have Life Passing Through the Years, 1986 to 2023 by Jenny Hunt, 2017, and she has been nice enough to supply us with a SoundCloud. But before I play that, I do just need to give a little trigger warning about the content of this poem. And with that being said, here we go.
Life Passing Through the Years, 1986 to 2023. 1986, born nearly dead, doctors diligently took the umbilical cord off from around my neck, letting me breathe through the alcohol air and finally able to see my single struggling mom. No living grandparents, for that was death's plan. After that, life got dark, like my mom's rum, although she did her best. 1993 to 1998. groomed, gaslighted, groped by the only grandpa I knew. Biological, no, but nonetheless, his vindictive, violating intentions killed my childhood memories. Death took him in 2003, letting me spit and dance upon his grave. 2002. A high school buddy trusted his friend's driving, racing and laughing, no care in the world, having fun, music blasting, wind in their faces, swerving, speeding, suddenly losing control. The driver crashed into a semi, running away for help. The back windshield cut my friend's life short. 2004. A teenage friend lost inside herself and betrayed. Gave up, too young, feeling as if she had no one to turn to. Never picked up the phone to call me for help. Instead, she picked up her dad's gun and pulled the trigger, for her self-inflicted wounds were not fast enough. 2008 to 2013. Finally gained a father figure after having none at all. Thought I had all the time in the world to listen to his stories and wise words. Took advantage of our time together. Cancer took him right after it took my aunt. 2023. My own depression, mental diseases, and loved ones' deaths deteriorate my fragile, frail, fearful mind, falling deeper and deeper in despair. I don't know how much more my mind can take. Fight or flight. Some tried. Others gave up on life. I fear I am next in line by my own two hands. May love and faith blast those dirty demons, for I now have my own family who may need me and my biological father I just met in 2021. End poem.
Great read there, Jenny. Thank you for sharing that with us. You know, I have a real appreciation for people who write in a straightforward style about difficult subjects, such as, you know, abuse, and especially sexual abuse, and depression and suicide, you know, because I think many of us have gone through difficult things in life, but oftentimes when we write about it covered up with metaphor or in an abstract way. And I think it's, like I always say, one of the most important things about being a poet is you get to give a voice to people. You know, somebody might read your poem and go, you know what, I can relate to that. And it might give them some sort of comfort, you know, to just see that there's somebody out there that understands what they've gone through. I did think this on a poetic level had a wonderful use of alliteration that added to the flow. And I like how it was almost a vignette style in that she covered, you know, different years, different decades. It was definitely an extremely emotional write because of its straightforwardness and because of the subject matter. But I, like I said, I like the raw honesty in it, and I'm very happy for her that she's gotten an opportunity to get to know her biological father. I also know from what she says she's got a wonderful child that she just dotes on, you know. So just thank you very much, Jenny, for sharing this with us. I really appreciate it. And Jeremy, your thoughts.
Yeah, I think you most spoke right there, Pam. It's not vignettes, it's chapters, is how we refer to it in the lyrical community.
That's right, chapters.
No, Jenny, I'm sorry to make a joke because you take it on face value, right? And I'm always a sucker. I'm always a sucker to assume this is extremely autobiographical, right? But if it's not, it's still beautiful in the fact that it has the creativity to it. And what I was really drawn to the most, and I love Pam's comments about all of it, because if someone is able, first of all, if it is indeed real, I love the fact that you have this, that first of all, the courage to share it, but also the timestamp to reflect upon, because so much of poetry for a lot of poets is autobiographical and cathartic. And so if you have this for something to go back upon and draw and point at and agree to share, then that's a beautiful thing. And even if it's totally, Jenny, we're gonna have you on our headliner show, so I know we're gonna learn more about you, but even if it's not entirely autobiographical, I had a tie to the part at 2008 to 2013. Took advantage of our time together. Cancer took him away right after it took my aunt. There was a tie there. I mean, as someone who doesn't even know the whole story, it made me want to – it drew me in, I guess is what I'm saying. So even if it's an entirely fictional write, there was and another example is in 2023, falling deeper and deeper in my despair. I don't know how much more of this my mind can take. I mean, there's cries in this poem that want to draw the reader in and want to connect to the voice of whatever – the narrative voice of whatever is trying to be conveyed. So I think there's beauty in that. I think there's beauty in any kind of poetry that wants to connect with the reader. And I think this is done whether it's autobiographical or whether it's entirely fictional. So I love it for both of those points. Very bold write. Look forward to hearing more about from you, from Jenny.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment, Jeremy. And your thoughts, Gavin?
I love the adjective you used there, bold. I think that this poem is incredibly raw and honest. It's like a deep reflection of life and loss and the impact that death has on those that are left behind. I think the author's use of vivid imagery and personal experiences makes the poem relatable and impactful to just about any reader. The timestamps gives it a really good context to where they were in life, and then allows the reader to say, oh, and in 2013, I was, in some sort of state that is relatable to this as well. So it helps the reader kind of like compare their own like misery as well, because like we all have our own shades of depression and that sort of stuff, I'm sure, especially as poets. Right? I don't just put my hands up on that one, but I think it also serves as a reminder to cherish our loved ones while we have them and to hold on to hope even in the darkest of times, right? So it's a very bold poem.
Oh, absolutely. You're very right about that. We all go through our own things. So great comment. All right. I'm actually going to go ahead. I'm going to put my poem up for me to read because I actually have two people on an After Midnight show. And Jeremy, if you would be so nice as to leave comments, I'd appreciate it. And I'll take your silence as a yes.
Yes.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Blowing the pipe in a pile of bones, teaching the lessons that he's never learned. He's wearing the scars but won't admit to the burn, keeping the score while the score's keeping him. The lights in the room are flickering dim. He's spinning the news, distorting the wind. A mastermind that hasn't mastered his mind, twirling the words dropped through the grapevine. He's owned, bold, and foiled as distant bells toll. Too blissful and unbothered to ever be whole. The screen is nothing but smoke and mirrors, telling the people their ways are in error. The flash fiction mob, the dramatic sob, all play their parts in Hollywood jobs. Blowing the whistle, blowing the pipe, the lies keep on living in schemes that are ripe. Disillusions, illusions, the raid can that's sprayed won't kill the roaches that keep leading the way. They make up the game, allow you to play, then switch up the rules week by week, day by day. The new dawn is rising in a soup can of fog, willingly killing the goats, the sheep, and the hogs. No one notices the sting of the fleas when they're getting down by the dog, bringing bullets and bones to his old master's knees. Platitudes and power will deny and devour, sneak up like a killer while the mind takes a shower. Stationary ingrates masturbate with hate, grooming the lion's den to bear the blood's weight, end poem.
And Pammy, your poetic device always is evolving. You're getting better at it. You're always getting better at it. And there are several little nuggets here that are so freaking intelligent that I love doting over Pam's poetry. I love the fact that she writes so constantly and she's always challenging herself to go to different levels of poetic embracementship. So I'll go ahead and invent another new word. But there's so much innuendo in this. There's so much rhyme. There's so much other intelligence to it that makes you just kind of you have to smile on the fact that even though that something is so dark, in my opinion, there's so much dark undertones in this write, Pam does it with such a masterful feeling of the love of language, the love of poetic device, that I can do nothing but smile. So, Pam, this is a great one. Kudos, claps, nothing but love to you.
Thank you. This is the point where you ask Gavin for a comment.
Gavin, would you like to comment on Pam's poem, please?
I'd love to, man. This sounds like it was so much fun to write and read. Okay, so platitudes and power will deny and devour, sneak up like a killer while the mind takes a shower. And then you just have this, like, the dramatic sob all play their Hollywood or their parts in Hollywood jobs, right? So we have this, like, recurring theme of like, this illusion, right? Like, Hollywood's good at portraying illusions and, you know, sneaking up on, like, a killer in the shower is kind of like casting a shadow in the curtain, you know what I mean? So there's so much imagery. There's so much wordplay. I think this poem's a straight banger.
And I love the fact that you called it a banger. It is a banger, Pammy. And let's go ahead and break the rules. I mean, a lot of times when we read poems and we give them kudos, the poet doesn't get to explain a lot of the innuendo that it was unnoticed. So do you want to talk a little bit about what you have intended in this?
Well, this was inspired in a contest with the song from Lupe Fiasco, who I actually never heard of before. And the person running at Ink and Essence said, you know, I'm a big fan of wordplay, you know, and, you know, just be creative and all that. And, you know, so, and I took from the song the instrumental, and that particular line, he just sits and listens to the people in the boxes. Everything he hears, he absorbs and adopts it. And to me, a lot of that spoke on the way, it spoke obviously on watching, to me anyway, on watching television, particularly the news, the way people are so easily manipulated and really just don't have, you know, necessarily any original thoughts of their own. So I was kind of trying to touch on the idea of manipulation and the people who just, like I said, don't really think for themselves but rather idolize those that are on that silver screen. So
how did rhyme play into that overall thing when you put this together?
Well, it's because, I don't know, have you ever listened to Lupe Fiasco?
Nope.
Well, considering your tasting music, I would actually highly recommend him to you. He is a rap hip-hop artist.
Okay.
So that's why I went with that, because, you know, and I was trying not to, obviously, I'm no Lupe Fiasco, I felt like, considering the fact that the prompt, the inspiration was, you know, hip-hop, rap, I was kind of trying to go for that kind of vibe there.
Worked well. I think it's great. I love the poem.
Well, thank you. All right. And I let me go ahead and get Gavin's poem up next. He has been wonderfully patient and great company. So there we go, Gavin. I put up the line revised so still. And go ahead and read it for us.
All right. I got to get into character a little bit here. So this one's about snowboarding. I call it the line because, like, when you're snowboarding, it's like the path that you take is an S. So it's a perfect alliteration with the letter S. Here you go. September's sunset shimmers, sojourn solemn shorelines, showing Saturn's silent spinning sands, swinging so still. Stored saline spheres, shaped stalactites, savoring Sabrina's seductive sedations, steadfast sweet sensations, slowly slipping silken scalpel so still, should she? Suddenly, shanty sonnets stir saintly songs, sounding sincerest soothing spells, satisfyingly sharing soul-filled smiles so still, should she? Softly, sailors sung stories striking scenic sunrises shining, stacked snowflakes sealed soft sheets somewhere so still. End poem.
Awesome read there, Gavin. Quite the performance. I have to ask, have you ever entered any of Jenny Hunt's alliteration contests?
No, that was actually my first, like, perfect alliteration that I tried.
Oh, wow. Well, very cool, very cool. You know, you really should, when you get a chance, go to Jenny Hunt's page because she's doing a series of contests for alliteration, and I think she's up to either, like, E or F. I did the letter D. But I like this, and honest to goodness, well, it makes me smile when people use alliteration, especially with the more difficult letters like S and Z, you know, the ones that you really kind of stumble over. When I saw you put this on the board, I was like, I had to ask Gavin, are you calling in to read this? Because I'm so glad you did. Not only because, like I said, you've just been a great commenter and reader, but also because I think it would be quite the slippery slope for me to try to read this. I would have just given it to Jeremy. But another great thing about this, I have to say, is the 100% S alliteration, other than the title, and it makes sense. Because, like, Jenny, when she runs her contest, and I've seen this in other alliteration contests, the judge will often put, and I agree, you know, I want alliteration with this letter, but I want it to make sense. Because, you know, is it really a poem if you're just throwing together a bunch of words, you know, which have, you know, no value or meaning to them? You know, and I think you've done a wonderful job with this. And I especially like stored saline spheres, shaped stalactites, savoring Sabrina's seductive sedations, steadfast sweet sensations, slowly slipping silken scalpels so still. You know, that really kind of speaks to me in the whole idea of the snow and the ice and the sting of it and the way it just, so you know, the sense of movement in this is really nice. So great alliteration, a fun write that definitely had me smiling, and very well done. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
And I'm sitting here, Gavin, writing a smart-ass comment and deleting it because it's too perfect. Because, no, it's not snowboarding. Skiing is the source, Gavin. You got to know that. But you catch it, dude. You catch it so well. You catch it exactly perfect because skiing was my source forever, and then I moved down south and it was surfing. And even the fact, everything that Pam said was right on, right? The whole alliteration thing is, I commented on hers the other day on these. I've never even thought, as much as I love alliteration, I've never thought of writing an entirely alliterated poem. And that's not what this is about. I mean, as much as you did it, that's not what it is about. It's about the fact that the line is revised, so still. It's in the title. You captured that cool feeling, and I know that you know what I'm talking about, when you make that S-curve. That's all that
yeah.
it is. It's on that groomer or even in that heavy pal. When you hit it just right, that's what this whole poem is about. Even, I mean, I will take all the words out because you did it. You did it in the feel of what you just the feeling of what you just presented in your verbal performance of the poem, and the fact that you were able to do it with the alliteration is just it's icing on the cake for me. So I was smiling the whole way through. Again, I wanted to write. I was sitting here typing that smartest comment, and I love the fact that you did it. And it's a spirit, man. You caught it 100%. And those that know the feeling. It's double entendre. So kudos, man. I got nothing but applause for this one.
Yeah, man. So you're so right, because when I started this poem, I wanted it to have an iambic pentameter that kind of met, like with the S sounding kind of thing to give it that kind of a thing to it.
Yep,
and then that creates the tempo of how you're navigating around the trees and stuff. Oh, man. Yeah, I was like high or something. I don't know.
I like
no,
that. Very cool.
It translates even without doing that, because yeah, you would want the meter and the pace to do that, right? You would want to have like the dodge and the bob and you would want to have the cadence, right? But it doesn't for those. Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm being so goofy about it because I'm nothing but smiles because you accomplished it, man.
Oh, thanks so
yeah.
much, guys. Yeah. It's a disguised love poem. So it's like you started off and you're like, so this one's about snowboarding and it's about like falling in love sort of. And then like this girl that's sad, you know?
Oh, wow. Cool. I like that. Very cool. I'm glad you added in that extra exclamation. And was there anything else that you'd like to say about your poem?
Yeah. This wasn't its first performance, and the first time I read it, everybody seemed to really like it. So I like this poem, I guess, for the performance aspect of it, like how you like get into character for it, I guess, is like the biggest thing about it.
Absolutely.
Just make sure that it's about, the author's note says about skiing, not snowboarding, and you're good, dude.
Well, I skateboard, so and I surf and snowboard. So like I like the longboard, you know.
You get a pass, then you surely get a pass.
Absolutely. All right. Well, up next we have Flourishings of Delight by Poetic Creations, and Jeremy, go ahead, please, and give that a read for us.
You bet. I hope I do you justice, DC. Flourishings of Delight by Poetic Creations. From a mango starfish to blueberry mums, flavors of cinnamon and lingering crumbs, magnolia grandiflora, vanilla-scented overflowing, a mannering dragonette is skirting up Cuttlefish Cove. Dancing and prancing, an octopus arrives on scene with tentacles grabbing and snaring, hungry, not me. The dainty dragonette hides cuttlefish, an octopus speak, communicating in flashes of color before biting beaks. An octopus is a parrot exploding out of the canopy, honking like a goose, creating such a big calamity. The blanketing snow goes unnoticed by naked eyes, utterly engrossed with breaststrokes bringing delight. Lightning, silent thunder, rebirth undeniable is unfolding. Ripples, earthquakes, yet darker matter is withholding. Where's all that bitterness, harmony in sequence cycling, as frequencies widening, sequins pinned on bird wings, succumb to the flames to become the ashes of tomorrow that rise up as orchids reborn from the burning snow. that melts into tree rings that widen as they grow to so tall, cut down like gold nuggets, or dug up before empires fall. End poem.
Great read, Jeremy, and a wonderful write by Poetic Creation. And Gavin, your thoughts?
So I really like the ocean as like a theme, and we have this this imagery of octopus and cuttlefish before biting beaks. An octopus is a parrot exploding out of the canopy, honking like a goose, creating such a big calamity. Right? All of this is just really fun imagery, right? I got a sense that they were enjoying this right to just like not slap these words together, but like really find how they intertwine, right? We have lightning, silent thunder, rebirth, undeniable as unfolding ripples, earthquakes, yet dark matter is withholding, right? So we have this like combination between this like lightning strike, this brightness, and this, and yet this dark matter is withholding it, right? It's all contained in like an element, right? So we have like a synchronicity of these elements that are coming together, and then that melds into tree rings that widen as they grow so tall, cut down like gold nuggets, are dug up before empires fall, right? This is another really fun line to write, I'm sure. I'm sure this poet enjoys writing, and you can really see it in their work.
Oh, definitely. And yes, you can tell that he had a lot of fun with this write. So great observations. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I love what Gavin just said because PC does have a lot of fun. I mean, PC knows how to bring that creativity to it. Again, Pammy, I mean, it's the Mad Hatter. And I love the fact that everyone wants to sit at the tea party because what PC does here is he brings a couple of metaphors together, and I want to be in that moment. I want to be in that crazy moment of nature in the fact that nature's being itself, and nature is being funky, nature is being unabashedly itself. I don't know. I don't know how else to put it other than the fact that it's a party, and it's a flourishing of delight, and PC is able to take the imagination of all of it and put it in a place that makes me want to be there and look at it in an eye that appreciates what's going on. For all the funkiness, for all the beauty, for all the color, and all the celebration. So it makes me smile 100%. And I think that, that Gavin put it very well.
I have to agree. Yeah, absolutely. And great comment there, Jeremy. Yeah, I had the same thought. It had that kind of, you know, Mad Hatter, Tea Party, Alice in Wonderland type feel. Because, you know, even though all the imagery is real, you know the octopus and the cuttlefish and all that and the parrots, it's the way he interacts them that gives it almost that surreal type vibe to it. I really felt like this was a treat for all the senses, a wonderful sense of movement, a great celebration of words. And, you know, I really like dancing and prancing. Octopus arrives on scene with tentacles grabbing and snaring, hungry, not mean. You know, I don't know. You just picture one of those old time cartoons where the octopus comes out on the stage and he has the cane and the top hat and is dancing. And it's just the kind of imagery that really makes you smile. So excellent write and very well done. All right, and let's see what we have next. Up next, we have Waiting for a Sign by Stelina, and it goes like this. The city breathes while inwardly the lonely weep. She is here again in the chill of the dank night. Emblazoned in scarlet, it warms and rouses his senses from the void in which he swims. He's waiting as he does every night, evaded by sleep. He needs a sign. Without one, he cannot move. For a glance or a soft murmur from her crimson lips, oh, he wants to speak to her and laugh easily like others do, but he cannot. He He has something to prove. Banter is alien to him. He can imagine her stifling a yawn at his attempts at witty or even mildly interesting conversation. Downing his drink, he moves to leave. It's late, time to go. Sometimes he waits there all night until dawn. As she passes, did he see the hint of a smile his way? Pausing just for a second, the guy with her turns and stares. He has a predatory look, hawk-nosed, slant-eyed, yet familiar. He throws down his money on the counter to pay. In his shadowy room quivers up his spine. In the mirror, his reflection stares back at him, hawk-nosed, slant-eyed. He hangs the scarlet dress with all the others in his closet. He lights a cigarette. He always waits for a sign. End poem. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm sitting here scouring it. Did you repeat that hawknose? That hawknose reference? I love Stell. I mean, Stell, you know I love you. And I love the fact that she's able to create these scenes and these little trysts, these little sensual exchanges in a way that makes me want to be part of it. I want to say that Stell, I have that hawknose. I'm the one sitting there at that diner because she makes you want to be part of it. She has a passion with everything that she writes. And it makes you want to I'm sorry for the repetition, guys. It makes you want to be part of the poem. It makes you want to be that object that she's talking about, because it's so endearing, it's so charged, and it's so accurate. It's so poignant and accurate in emotion. So every time she writes, she makes me smile. I love everything that she does with her collaborations with Arcana and on her own, because it's charged. I don't know. It's raw emotion. It's poetry, and it's everything I aspire to put into my own words. So right on, Stowe.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Gavin, your thoughts?
So I think the woman is portrayed as someone who's out of reach, right? It's symbolized by her scarlet dress that warms and rouses his senses from the void in which he swims. Her appearance seems to give him a sense of purpose and hope, but he's unable to approach her due to his lack of confidence and fear of rejection. The man's desire for a sign from the woman becomes a recurring motif throughout the poem. It highlights his need for validation and reassurance. But the poem also introduces like a darker element to it with the introduction of another man who's described as predatory and hawk-nosed, slant-eyed. The man's reaction to the woman's hint of a smile towards the protagonist suggesting a potential threat, right? Like creating a sense of danger and adding to the tension of that story. And I feel like I can kind of relate to this in a lot of ways. I feel this is a very relatable poem.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, great observation. Yeah, I thought this was, I mean, Stell definitely has a gift for poetry and especially story style poetry. I really thought this was an amazing write with strong imagery and told a dark tale of obsession. I actually took this extremely dark, especially near the end. I really feel like this is the story of a serial killer. And the guy he's seeing, because both the guy that he sees with her and the reflection he sees in the mirror are the same description. I think what we're looking at is a serial killer who has a kind of a psychosis. And it makes sense to me because the fact that a lot of, you know, you read a lot about serial killers. And yeah, there are the ones that are charming, you know, that you read about. But then there's the ones that, you know, nobody was surprised because, you know, like Jeffrey Dahmer is an example of a serial killer who was extremely socially awkward. But I could be taken in too dark of a direction, but no matter what, I think Stell just really has a gift for storytelling and drawing us in and bringing us, you know, closer to those characters as we just want more of what's going to happen next. So excellent write and very well done.
Well, totally agree, Pam. I mean, if we were going to take a vote of anyone here on AP who would leave a severed horse head in your bed, Stell would be my number one top.
Yes, yes, totally. I could see that. I could see that. Yes. So I don't actually, you know, I just kind of picture more of like this live beating human heart or something like that. Because I don't think Stell would actually hurt a horse.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe she'll boil a rabbit. How about that? She might do that.
Yeah, she might boil a rabbit. Yes, definitely. All right. Well, up next we have Changing Colors by Ben Hart. And Gavin, would you give that a read for us, please?
Ooh, I get the Ben Hart this one this time. The Ben Hart one this time. Changing Colors by Ben Hart. One, the Chameleon. Louis loved to watch the laundry swaying on the line. Proud banners of suburban empires, where the silly old king poured himself a scotch every night. And the fair and kind queen tried to convince Louis's little sister there was no such thing as vampires. She loved being as an ocean, the immovable object blooming into motion. No, not even photographs, pixel, or paper could capture the emotion of the dandelions dancing with the wind, changing colors on the quick, reclaiming parking lots for nature. La Louis de Fuller, a piece of incarnate Illinois, brought to European theaters bleak, where the human chameleon made the critics forget their critiques. And maybe making Frenchmen weep is nothing unique. It's still something. It got their hearts pumping, and that's all she ever needed. Two, will be the birds, born from a blue womb, hatchlings from a robin's egg. God was cruel enough to give us wings only to create contrast at twilight for human eyes chasing imagination. But at least there is one difference, mind. Between us and them, you will never hear us beg for regurgitated sick from their fat necks or take their breadcrumb charity for kind. Three, the Nightmare. I once had a dream of brick hedges casting shadows over a garden of stone. But when spring awoke in this concrete winterland, I was no longer alone. And there were dancers, masters of the frigid stages, waltzing through different states of decay on their self-harm razor blade skates. But as spring came too close, in hopes of rhymes meeting, she undid the freezing, and the dancers sank below. In her horror, she leapt back, and so they all froze. And when I woke up in a pool of glacial runoff, I found in the demonic mobile that shadow as dancing above my bed, in the eyes of those dancers, and the cold sweat that their melting blood. End poem.
Great read, Gavin. And what a wonderful write by Ben Hart. It had stunning imagery and metaphors. It definitely took a lot of twists and turns and kept getting darker and darker as it got near the end. You know, it had such a nightmarish quality to it. And it really made me think on the idea of those dreams of freedom, those dreams of, you know, getting away from that small town and, you know, just expanding yourself, but feeling held back by those cold talons of, you know, whether it's other people's expectations or whatever it is that holds you back. So excellent write and very well done. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Can't stress it enough, Gavin. Keep contributing, man. You have a talent for reading poetry. And it's always a pleasure to hear you perform. I can't say it enough tonight. So please keep being part of this community. I love Ben. And what's the name? What's that movie? Is it American Beauty? I mean, fact check me, Pam. Where he does the most beautiful thing, and he does the filming of the bag, and he goes, "This is a, you know what I'm talking about? It's a bag. It's a plastic bag." And he goes, "You want to see how beautiful?"
Yes. Where he films it, and it's like going, like dancing in the wind. I can't remember the name of the movie, but it's so beautiful. It might be.
I think it's American Beauty, right? It's not Donnie Darko. It's not Donnie Darko. It's American Beauty, right? Whatever. The only reason I bring that up is it doesn't matter. I mean, the point is that I think what Ben does is he makes me think of that. He finds beauty in when I'm hearing Gavin read this poem, I'm finding beauty in stuff that is just, it's an eye for beauty in a place where I wouldn't look for to find the beauty. I don't know how else to describe it. I think even when it's something that's dark, like what you mentioned, Pam, even when it's dark overtoned, there's beauty to it. And it makes me want to read more. It makes me want to get in that mindset of you can find appreciation in every avenue, in every emotion of life. You can celebrate it. And I think what Gavin does with both his artwork and both his words is it's a mindset that makes me smile. I mean, it's kind of cheesy, but I don't know a better way to put it. There's beauty in the words, and there's beauty in the perspective. So kudos.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Gavin, your thoughts.
Okay, so in this first part, Louis portrayed as like a free-spirited and imaginative character who finds beauty in the natural world, right, like you said. But then she's contrasted with the mundane and materialistic suburban lifestyle of like the neighbors. So the use of imagery, such as like laundry swaying on the line and dandelions dancing in the wind, right, it creates a sense of movement and vitality that's absent from the static of suburban landscape. Right? And then you have the second part that introduces birds as a symbol of freedom and independence. The speaker contrasts birds with humans. It emphasizes the bird's ability to fly and escape their constraints of the ground. The use of like a religious language, such as born from a blue womb, creates a sense of like a transcendence and like a spiritual significance to it. And then you have this third part, which is like surreal and haunting narrative. It explores themes of like decay and morality. And the speaker, it's like they're describing a dream of a garden of stone and brick hedges, where the dancers move through stages of decay on razor blade skates. The arrival of spring causes the dancers to melt and decay even further. It creates like a sense of horror and disgust. And the use of language such as like a glacial runoff and a demonic mobile creates a sense of unease and instability. So I think overall it's like themes of freedom, imagination, decay, and morality. These are very vivid imagery, and it's a surreal narrative. I really, really enjoy these contrasts. I like how we have changing colors, right, as a theme for each of these three different things, but it's changing colors in such a different way.
Yeah, it really is. You're right. That's a great observation there. Cool comment. And all right, well, up next we have A Dance Underneath the Curtains by S. Sharp. Salt spray, crashing waves, daffodils floating on wind-swept clouds, a cobra feigns the strike. Spinning the moon, darkness and light begin to understand one another like time and eternity. End poem. And Gavin, I'd like to start with your thoughts.
So I like a cobra feigns the strike, kind of like introduces the idea of deception or illusion, right? The cobra is like a symbol of danger and fear. It's not actually striking, but rather pretending to do so. Right? So this line can be interpreted as like a metaphor for the ways that which appearances can be always as they seem.
And then you follow that with like the spinning moon. It introduces a sense of like cosmic movement and transformation to the poem.
It really does. Yeah, you're right. And a cobra strike, feigns the strike, really does speak on that idea of illusion and deception. So great comment. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think Scott's a storyteller, and he's told us that before. And I like the fact that all of this is, to me, it was a very sensual poem. And I think it's all about sex, and I think that the dance underneath the curtains is what happens between a couple of lovers. And I think what Scott did is it's a biting, for lack of a better term, it's a biting dance. And once you do it, there's a deeper understanding. So for me, it was a very sensual poem. And I love the fact that Scott is able to speak in metaphor the way he does.
I like that. I like that. And honestly, I guess I hadn't even thought of it as a sensual poem until you said something. And then, yeah, I could see that, actually. You know, especially with the movement created, the crashing waves, the salt spray, and even the emotional connection and begin to understand one another. You know, I definitely thought this had wonderful imagery and metaphors. It was a beautiful, beautifully written brevity. And I really like how there's this, to me, it spoke on the balance between light and dark that nature creates. But I do definitely like your take on that, Jeremy. And it opened my eyes to see the poem in a new way. So very cool.
Yeah, I also hadn't thought of that, and it was an interesting realization, because it's like there's like a reconciliation between opposites in that way, like they love each other, like opposites attract.
Yeah, exactly. Very cool. All right, and most likely our last poem for the night, but we'll see how things go, is A Dance by Daniel Duhaime. And Jeremy, will you give that a read for us, please?
Absolutely. A Dance by Daniel Duhaime. Dancing with the souls of happiness while embracing the angel of creation with open arms to receive, like a butterfly set free to express itself in a dance of elegant synchronicity with music that only the heart can interpret, floating upon the treble clefs in an endless sea of F and G minor until converging in a way of madness. Violent movements with the tempo of a spellbound lyre playing haunted melodies that are a mesmerizing spell, ending in a sheer moment of rapture and poem.
Great read, Jeremy. I really like this one. In fact, I have to say, I think it's probably one of my favorites of Daniel Duhaime's. I really like how it's a celebration of dance and music, because while, you know, you can dance without music, the two definitely go much better together. And so I really like that it's not only the description of the dance, but then he brings in the music floating upon the treble clefs in an endless sea of F and G minor into converging in a wave of madness. I mean, you can hear the music. You can see the movement of the dancing. The way he just leads us into that end line works so well with the, you know, playing haunting melodies that are mesmerizing spell, ending in a sheer moment of rapture. There's something about that I could almost picture, like, you know, naked women dancing around Stonehenge. It just has that feel to it, you know, to me anyways. But just an amazing write and very well done. And Gavin, your thoughts?
So as someone who really enjoys the works of Carl Jung, synchronicity is one of my favorite words in the English language. I believe he's the one that coined the term. And it's kind of like an astrological phenomenon in a way, like where the stars align in a certain way and like a social element, right?
So it's like the dance that was never meant to be, right? And a dance of an elegant synchronicity, right? So we have like a rich and evocative imagery in this poem, with the butterflies serving as a metaphor for freedom, and the music being interpreted by the heart rather than the mind. So the mention of the treble clefs of F and G minor adds like a musical imagery to it. So we have all these different elements of the imagery coming in, while the reference to a spellbound lyre playing haunting melodies creates a sense of like an enchantment and mysticism to it. And then I think overall the poem's going to build up into a crescendo in a way, with the violent movements of the tempo of the lyre leading to a moment of sheer rapture. The use of language here is particularly striking, with the word spell suggesting that more magic and enchantment, adding on to all that. So I like the repetition of that. I like the positioning of all of the end poems. I like that there's no real form to it other than like, giving you that image that they're trying to portray. So I think that this kind of reads as a painting in that way, like a musical painting.
Yeah, I like that. Absolutely. I have to agree. Great comment. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
No, great comments out of both of you guys. And I've kind of been obsessed recently about writing poems about poetry, about using the poetic device and talking about all the aspects of language and poetry. But there's a kinship with music as well. And I know nothing about music, but the fact is that he talks about F and G minor and the lyre that was already mentioned. The fact that you can talk about anything that makes it beautiful with and the poetry and wow, talking in circles, love it. Well done. Enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, this has been a wonderful night of poetry.
For more music, I'll just add on to your comment. F minor and G minor are commonly used for like romantic and dramatic compositions, usually like sonatas and symphonies.
Oh, that's cool.
If that's helpful.
That's a cool thing to know.
See, I knew you'd say me, Gavin. Thank you so much. Because, yeah, I mean, that's the beauty of it all, right? I mean, that's, yeah. Thank you for that.
That is awesome. That is awesome. And I have to say thank you, Jeremy, for co-hosting with me. I really appreciate you. Enjoy hanging out with you. Thank you to Sean and Gavin for calling in. Great commenting, great company. Appreciate it very much. And of course, make sure to check out all the poetry topic boards and contests put out by our late night poets, hosts, and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. Thank you to Hats and Jenny for hanging on the board, and thank you to everyone who provided rights for this show. We really appreciate you all, and have a good night, everyone.